This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. And we're going to begin today with something that links the Olympic slopes above Sochi, Russia, with our lives right here in New England. Or because of rising global temperatures, it might be more accurate to say less and less snow as each year goes by.
It's easy to forget that, especially given all the snow we've seen this winter here in Boston, and with more snow in the forecast for later this week. But consider this. The temperatures in the mountains above Sochi hit 50 degrees this week, and Russian Olympics organizers are ready to tap a reservoir of 25 million cubic feet of snow they've stored from previous winters if necessary.
Climatologists say of the 19 cities that have hosted the Winter Olympics, only six of them could host them again by the end of this century. And to bring this all back a little closer to home, more than half of the 103 ski resorts here in the Northeast may no longer be viable in just 30 years.
These are among the facts Porter Fox wrote about this past weekend in the New York Times. His point goes well beyond concern about the local ski economy. It has to do with what he calls the end of snow and what that means to the Earth's climate system and water cycle.
Porter Fox is the features editor at Powder Magazine and the author of Deep, the Story of Skiing and the Future of Snow. And he joins us now. Welcome to the program, Porter Fox. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And nice job on that piece in the New York Times. By the way, listeners can link to that at radioboston.org. We're also joined by Elizabeth Burakowski. She was one of two researchers from the University of New Hampshire who looked into the effects of climate change on the winter tourism economy in 2012. She's now with the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado. And welcome to you, Elizabeth Burakowski. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, are you concerned about less and less snow? What do you see out there when you're skiing on those mountains or taking walks in the woods? What have you observed in your lifetime here in New England or elsewhere around the globe? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Porter Fox, if I may, I'd like to start with you. You're a skier. You wrote this past weekend about what you have observed on the ski slopes from your perspective as a skier. Give us a sense of what you've seen out there over the years that you find so alarming.
Mostly what I saw was over the last 2 years researching this book, Deep. The folks that I talked to had been living in the mountains for many decades. You need a long period of time to see real effects of climate change, and folks who have been up in the Rockies, the Cascades, for 50 years or more had stories across the boards of more snow back in the day and colder temperatures. And a lot of them were folks that didn't even believe that humans were warming the earth. They just knew what they saw. And that was a big part of that book, was that empirical evidence.
Yeah. And tell me, though, personalize this a little bit, because you grew up skiing here in New England. You've skied all over the planet. Have you observed it? I mean, is it noticeable?
I certainly have. I grew up skiing in northern Maine and lived out in Jackson Hole for a while, and I've worked for Powder Magazine since 1999, so they sent me to five continents to report on skiing and the mountain lifestyle and whatnot. And the most obvious thing that I have seen is the rising snow line. In some places, it's not up to the point where it's actually on the slopes yet, but in the communities surrounding the mountains just downhill from the resort, people have seen 1,000, 2,000 vertical feet of snow level rise.
Yeah, it's really dramatic. You write, and we just mentioned this in the introduction, and this made my head spin a little bit, I have to admit, when I read it this weekend, that over half the ski areas in the Northeast may be closed in 30 years. That's almost hard for me to believe.
It was completely surreal for me to research as well. That study was done also by Daniel Scott, who just put out his study on future Winter Olympic host cities. He works at the University of Waterloo. They've been researching the direct effect of climate change on the ski industry since the early 1980s. A very, very valuable source. And it was completely shocking. I grew up skiing in Maine, skiing in New England. Island is such an important part of our communities here. In the wintertime, you know, a lot of times there's not much else to do but go to the ski hill and see your neighbors. And it's just been a really big part of our life here, and it really would be a shame to see that go.
Well, Dr. Burakowski, Elizabeth Burakowski, let me bring you into this discussion. As we mentioned, you're a climate researcher at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder. Give us some facts here. How quickly is this planet warming up, and what's it doing to winters, starting with winters here in the Northeast?
Well, the Northeast U.S. is pretty interesting in that winter is warming faster than any other season, and this spells trouble for the ski industry. We've been seeing maximum daytime temperatures increase on the order of about a half a degree to a degree and a half per decade. When you look at minimum temperatures, it's even more worrisome. We see up to a degree and a half to 2 degrees per decade. And this is really troublesome, especially for adaptation strategies like snowmaking, which require cold temperatures. So the study that Porter had alluded to by University of Waterloo incorporated that into their analysis. And what they find is that resorts in southern New England probably won't be able to get by on snowmaking much into the future, say 50 to 100 years from now.
50 to 100 years. But that fact that Porter cited, many of these resorts could be closed in 30 years. Is that what you're seeing? Is it that dramatic?
It's pretty dramatic. I mean, winter is a very important time of year for the northeastern United States, not just for the ski industry, but also for our ecosystems. We do require snow cover and cold temperatures to keep invasive insects at bay, for example. And what we're seeing is that, yes, we are seeing warmer temperatures, and coinciding with that is earlier lakes icing out. We also see fewer days with snow on the ground, and a lot of this ties back to the ski industry.
Yeah. So what kind of impact would that have on local economies?
When you look at the northeastern United States, we have about 30,000 to 50,000 jobs that are supported by the winter tourism industry. And this ends up being about $1.8 billion to $2.7 billion in economic activity. So this isn't just the spending that's directly spent at the resorts buying a lift ticket or a hot cocoa at the lodge. This also includes the money that's spent in the mountain communities. So if you buy gas at the mountain community or if you go out to a restaurant, all of that's included in that calculation.
Yeah, so it's quite a hit. And Porter, I think you made the point really well this weekend, and I'd love you to speak to this issue. I mean, someone might ask, yeah, okay, ski industry, you know, cry me a river. I'm not a skier. Why should I care about this?
It's a great question, and I address it in the book and in that article that we want to save skiing. We love to ski, but this is a much bigger issue and conversation than that. There's 65 million snow sports enthusiasts around the world. We're trying to activate that community through Protect Our Winters, a great advocacy group that's been working tirelessly to save snow in the mountains for a long time now, since 2007. And we're trying to activate that crowd. They're very skiers are very influential. They're typically wealthy. They're business leaders, politicians that have ski homes. Those are the folks that we're trying to get through to try to create a national policy shift in how we create and consume energy and try to save snow.
But why? Tell me why. I mean, again, you address this in the piece. Why save skiing when there are more pressing consequences of climate change to worry about? I mean, what's the answer to that question?
Well, we're trying to save everything. We're not just trying to save skiing. Skiing is, a surprisingly large sector of the U.S. economy, winter snow sports. That's one reason to save skiing, for the jobs, for the tax revenue and whatnot. Also, it is a way of life for many, many folks living up in the mountains, not to mention the fact the 70 million people that live downstream of those mountains that depend on snowmelt for their water supply, and around the world, the billion people that depend on snowmelt for their water supply.
Listeners, we're talking to Porter Fox. He's the features editor at Powder Magazine and author of Deep, The Story of Skiing and the Future of Snow. And we're talking about just what that means, and particularly how New England might look down the road. Also with us, Elizabeth Burakowski. She's a climate researcher at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado. If you've got comments or questions about this, give us a call. Tell us what you've observed out there, 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Elizabeth Burakowski, I'd like to ask you about sort of to really sort of extending this narrative of concern. I mean, I grew up skiing. I love the mountains. The idea of the snow disappearing at these high altitudes breaks my heart to think about it. But I mean, talk about the consequences of what it means to the sort of chain of events that are linked to the climate.
Yeah, I mean, this is something it's interlinked. It's not just winter that's changing. We do see changes in other seasons as well. We will be seeing warmer temperatures in summer and heat-related illness and such tied to that. For me, it is a personal issue. I have been skiing in the Northeast since I was about 7 or 8 years old, and I'm happy to report that some of the resorts, the smaller ones that I've been growing up with, are still in business, but there are a lot that didn't quite make it. With the New England Lost Ski Areas Project, they've identified over 600 small resorts that have closed in the past few decades as a result, not just of climate change. It's been a combination response to inability to keep up with snowmaking with the big resorts, and also an insurance liability. And this is troublesome because these smaller resorts are really, you know, they're feeder programs for the big-time resorts. If you start off at a small resort, you're much more likely to become a lifelong skier, and I'm a product of that.
Yeah. What about artificial snowmaking, Porter? It's come a long way. How many resorts now depend on artificial snowmaking, and can that save the resorts in the long run?
The NSAA says that around 88% of U.S. resorts now use snowmaking. It is a stopgap adaptation measure. They've been doing it for quite some time, along with a few cloud seeding operations. And, you know, largely to make sure the mountain is open for Christmas. That's a huge part of the ski industry's, you know, money-making season. And but the snowmaking requires an incredible amount of water and electricity. And in the future, on a warmer planet, those are two things that are going to be very expensive and possibly even hard to come by at that volume. So for a long-term fix, not very likely. For the short term, absolutely. There are resorts now, they lease snowmaking equipment. It's in North America in the wintertime, goes down to the southern hemisphere in our summertime. So it's spreading quickly right now, but probably not a long-term fix.
Yeah. So what else is out there in terms of fixes? The National Ski Area Association has reacted with ideas like campaigns for sustainable slopes and the climate challenge. Will policies like these make a difference?
They're commendable, as I mentioned in the article, but again, certainly not a fix. There needs to be much larger and quicker policy shift on a national scale. That's what we're trying to do, trying to get through to the White House, get through to Congress, talk to lawmakers about what's going on, and even using snow as a way to get in touch with them. Protect Our Winters can go through athletes, professional athletes that have inroads to folks in Congress and whatnot. That's what's needed right now, and we desperately need the ski industry and other industries to get on board with that.
And can you tell us a little more in detail what Protect Our Winters does? What do you propose to do?
They're tremendous. I spent those 2 years, again, researching the book, looking for their counterparts somewhere else in the world. It just doesn't exist, not in the way that they are doing it. They are sending a message to Washington, to businesses, to politicians, saying, here's what the future looks like without snow. It's very grim, and it's not just the ski industry. And they are lobbying folks to try to create climate change legislation, try to shut down coal-fired power plants. As those power plants shut down, they're trying to address the issue in Montana and Wyoming in the Powder River Basin, where now coal mines are trucking or training the coal from there to deep water ports in the Pacific Northwest and sending it to China to burn. They just are about to come out with a movie about that, in fact. So awareness, action, they go to schools, talk to kids about it. They're really across the boards doing everything, and they're doing it with a very, very small staff. But they work tirelessly at it.
And Elizabeth Burakowski, as a climate researcher, do you hear hopefulness in that approach from groups like that? Is that what's needed to reverse this trend?
Absolutely. I mean, we really need to reduce the amount of greenhouse gas emissions that we're producing right now. And it will make a difference. I mean, either way, we probably will lose snow. There's a lot coming down the pipeline in terms of the amount of warming we're going to be seeing from what's already been emitted into the atmosphere. But it could make the difference for places like New York and New England, where we're expected to see a decrease in the number of days with natural snow cover, about half under a lower emission sort of scenario, where we embrace renewable technology and work to have more energy efficiency. But if we continue on the path we're on, we might see 75% fewer days with snow on the ground under a higher emission scenario.
And come back to the situation in New England. You said we're seeing more warming here in New England at a faster rate than just about anywhere else in the states. Why is that?
What we're seeing is an faster rate of warming in winter compared to other seasons in New England. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the north, the entire U.S., most of the regions with really strong winter warming trends tend to be in areas with snow cover. And that's really troublesome because that means there could be potential for feedback loops here where we lose our reflective snowpack and exacerbate the warming that occurs.
Yeah, and Porter, you write about Europe and the Alpine glaciers. Some of us have been lucky enough to ski over there, and they are receding and disappearing at alarming rates as well.
Absolutely. They've lost half of their glacial ice in about the last century, and the Alps are warming at 2 to 3 times the global average. I drove through there. I did about 1,000 miles through the Alps last year. Researching the book and went through a few resorts that were closed, many others that had brown slopes at the bottom of the hill where skiers had to get on a lift, download onto a lift, and take that to the bottom because you can't ski there.
And this isn't
anymore.
Just a sort of every now and then thing, right? I mean, this is beginning to happen more regularly at a larger number of these resorts.
Yeah, it sure is. It's happening across the boards in the Alps, more in Germany and Austria, where there are many resorts below 3,000 meters, a little bit less in the French and Swiss Alps that are a bit higher. The snow line is moving up. It's moving up rapidly. There are some trends of less snow in certain areas, but what we kind of have our eye on is just the warming, the overall warming.
Yeah.
And some climatologists suggest that there will come a point at which it doesn't matter where the clouds go or what precipitation comes down, warming becomes the predominant factor in that equation, and it will come down as rain.
I wanted to ask you about something else that you wrote about this, which fascinated me. You wrote that everywhere you travel to ski, you're always struck by the brotherhood among mountain folk, which I've observed myself. But you say you were surprised that the winter sports community isn't reacting more vigorously and swiftly to the effects of climate change, which is affecting so dramatically their world. Why not?
It's very surprising, and I believe the reality is that people just simply don't know all the facts. There's a lot of static out there when it comes to learning about climate change and what sort of moderate predictions are for the future in terms of snow and ice. I don't think people care less. I don't think they're purposefully ignoring it. I simply think they don't know, and that was a big part of writing Deep. I wanted to get across the facts. You can draw your own conclusions, but at least you know what scientists that have been studying this for a long time have to say.
Well, Elizabeth Burakowski, let me give you the last word as one of the scientists who knows the facts. Leave us with a parting thought about this discussion. It doesn't sound hopeful to me. Can you give us reason for hope?
Well, I'd like to think that people will start reacting, not just because of changes in the ski industry, but because of persistent drought, but because of warmer temperatures affecting the climate that they live in. And I'm hopeful that greenhouse gas emissions will decrease in the coming years, and that hopefully by the time I'm 80 years old or so, my grandkids will be skiing at the same resorts I got to learn at.
Well, let's hope indeed. Dr. Elizabeth Burakowski, she's a climate researcher at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Porter Fox, he's feature editor at Powder Magazine and author of Deep, the Story of Skiing and the Future of Snow. You can find a link to his New York Times piece from this past Sunday called The End of Snow at RadioBoston.org. Porter Fox, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
And listeners, stay with us. Coming up, how the community of Newton is grappling with the deaths of three teenagers in 6 months. We'll speak with a Newton mother whose daughter took her own life. I'm Anthony Brooks with Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.